Hello, hello. Welcome back, one and all. Hope everyone had a wonderful holiday break. I know we did. We took a little 2 weeks off. You know, like everyone else does. It's the holidays. What are you going to do? This is the Center Ring, TCR for short, episode 14, coming at you live, pre-recorded from an undisclosed location. The time is 9 p.m.-ish. The date is January 4th, 2015. You like that? I added that in. It gives people a reference. I learned while listening back. I had no idea what date this is. This also covers our butts to where if we say something stupid,
we can be like, oh, no, that was...
No, I haven't way before.
That was on September.
It also gives us credit if we nailed some predictions right.
So it's a win-win all the way around.
It really is. It really is. That voice you hear... is the co-host of the show. His name is Brandon. My name is Tim. Brandon, how are you today? Did you have a good holiday?
I did. It was two very short weeks.
It really was.
I'm sad to be working again for an entire week at a time.
Yeah, when you work two jobs like I do, you really don't ever have a holiday. In fact, I did the math. I had both jobs off New Year's Eve. I lied. I had to work New Year's Eve at one job, but I didn't have to work an overnight at the radio station. It was the first time I got to experience a holiday like everyone else for the first time in 4 years.
I worked Monday, Tuesday, and a half day on Wednesday both weeks, and that's it.
You're spoiled. Spoiled. So appreciate it when you have it, which is why we ended up taking 2 weeks off, really. We were going to do a show, and we were like, you know, there's really just not a whole lot going on in esports. And why not take advantage of that now? But, you know, we didn't take the whole weeks off. We were still working behind the scenes for you, the listener, and soon-to-be viewer. Viewer? Say what? That's right. We spent 2 weeks. Two brutal, frustrating, curse word filled weeks working on our other outsources for you. We can proudly say from very blood, sweat, and tears that we have finally set up the YouTube channel. That's right. So that's what we did. Really, we took 2 weeks off from the actual show to work on behind the scenes stuff. We have our YouTube channel. I honestly don't know what the URL is. Go to our website, TCR.
Go to the website
TCR.
And find it. It's there, yeah.
Go to our website, tcr.gg. On the bottom right, you'll see a YouTube link.
Well, anybody that's ever made a YouTube channel knows.
You cannot, like, there's requirements
you have
before.
To reach these certain milestones to even have your URL
right.
usable.
So, go to our website. You can go to the YouTube. That will soon have all previous episodes on there to where if you really wanted to go back and listen to them, by all means, go back and listen to them. It will have this episode on there. What it offers you, what we've learned, is people, for whatever reason, don't understand the point of a podcast, which is it's audio.
Well, so wait, hold on. The people listening right now, you know the point of a podcast.
Right.
To all of our future visitors that are watching this on YouTube in the months and years to come, you have no idea what a podcast is.
So I understand that. So we adapt. We change with the times, man. So that's what we have going on there. You will be able to, I guess, have my idea is you have it on in the background, and we have video clips and pictures. If we bring up something visual, it will be there. That being said, don't ever feel like you have to go to the YouTube page. The show will still be directed for audio purposes only. Like a radio show.
It'll still be on iTunes. You can still listen to it from the website.
Right. You will miss nothing by not going to YouTube, but you will gain some if you ever wanted to. Also, I hear on YouTube you can just take the audio from there anyway somehow. I don't know. Listen,
YouTube Red,
I'm not part of that YouTube
technology
crowd. All right. I can honestly say we don't swear on the show, not for really any purpose. We just don't. But I can honestly say from the bottom of my heart, fuck making videos. How people have the patience for that, You were on TeamSpeak with me.
For the listeners at home, the TeamSpeak goes the exact opposite of the show. There's nothing but really cursing going on the TeamSpeak, and listening to Tim try to work in Adobe Premiere was very entertaining.
Look, I work in radio. I can do audition blindfolded. No problem. It works amazing. Everything where you think it should be. Premiere is the exact opposite, and I wanted to punch my computer screen so hard, but
if
I didn't.
If it wasn't for that pretty BenQ monitor.
Right, if it wasn't for the BenQ, man, I'd be having a new monitor right now. So the YouTube should be up. By the time you listen to this, I think what we're going to try to do just for show updates, and then we'll get into the show, because there's plenty of things to talk about. We're trying to do it to where we typically have the audio up the next day, because we record super late, so we have the audio up the next day.
Tuesday morning, yep.
Right, Tuesday morning, and then Wednesday, I think we're going to have the video up.
Wednesday afternoon, the video should be up.
Yeah, I can typically edit audio really fast for you on to have it up the next day. Video is going to take time after work, and that will be up on Wednesday. So deal with it, but we do have that option there. Next step is to get our Twitch page up for, you know, whatever thing we have live going on there. Either way, one of these days. Either way, YouTube is up there for the listeners. Please subscribe there for any fun-filled things there. Right now, it's just episodes, but who knows what's to come. We'll figure that out when time comes. Either way, though, for the show, episode 14 of The Center Ring, we have kind of a grab bag show, right? December is slow. January is kind of ramping up. But overall, it's going to be a mixture of the micro the entire time, maybe some clutch or kick, where we see kind of what's worth paying attention to, what's not. So I really don't know how to set this up other than let's just get into it, right? We have really the biggest news here is Blizzard Activision has bought out MLG, Major League Gaming. That's kind of the biggest news that's come down recently. They bought them for $46 million, but hold the brakes because $31 million of that was just for debt alone.
Yeah, so it's the stockholders.
Yeah, you're more of the business savvy guy. So, like, to me, I read that and I was like, whatever. But let's hear your, okay, more business.
So they say $46 million buyout. Sounds like a huge amount of money. But the problem is that because MLG had done, I think they did three debt financing rounds, which is basically says they go up to an investor and they go, I will take, or, you know, we need X amount of dollars. We'll pay you back X amount of dollars plus whatever interest. It's like getting a loan, like a home loan, car loan, whatever.
All right. I understand that.
So that's debt financing. So when Activision Blizzard came in, with the $46 million, 31 of that $46 million went towards paying off those debts that MLG had racked up trying to survive through the dark ages of console esports. The whole esports, you know, took a downturn there. And what was it, around 2010 or so? So, or 2012, I guess.
Basically, yeah. Or around there. Whatever. Yeah, so, we're not finance.
So the leftover money from that financing is all the stockholders are going to see. Which, when you see $46 million and you think, wow, that's a lot of money, then you realize, you know, 80% of that is, or I'm sorry, say like 75% of that is no longer there. Each of those stockholders are getting a much smaller piece of the pie.
Which makes sense, because you got to pay your debts before you can start paying out any type of dividends or anything like that.
Right, so, and there were a surprising number of stockholders.
I kind of talked about this before the show. I was kind of shocked that it only sold for 46, which really is kind of 15 when you factor in they bought it knowing that how much that was in debt, right? I think anyone who's kind of been paying attention to the esports scene, though, really in retrospect, are we that surprised MLG was so in debt? They've really been kind of getting the participation award, in my eyes, for the longest time for being MLG, right? Though, I mean, look at their tournaments, what they've been holding recently, right? Halo's been struggling. Yeah, okay, they have a really big tournament showing up here with the World Tournament, but overall,
and 90% of that is crowdfunded.
That's crowdfunding. That is no indication of MLG's success back to, in my eyes, MLG used to be like the measuring stick for, I guess, people had high hopes for MLG back in the day.
Well, I mean,
that was
they did, and they do have the Columbus Esports Arena thing that they built, which I think is a big piece of where all that debt came from. And I'm not sure.
Did they build it too soon?
Well, no. I think they built. Why would you build it in Columbus other than the fact that there was cheap land there? They said they get people in the seats. But if I built a big arena, I would say the same thing.
Again, I saw the video. It did not look like those seats were filled in the one SEVO finals that were there.
And so what most people were concerned about, though, when the sale was announced was the CSGO major that had already been announced and scheduled to go on in Columbus that we will probably be at.
How it will all handle it? Because obviously Blizzard, Activision, I mean, Blizzard, you have all of their games, Hearthstone, Heroes of the Storm, StarCraft, soon to be Overwatch. You have Activision, which is more Call of Duty, but I don't think that's going to have.
They already have a Call of Duty World League going on.
Yeah, and that's strictly with Activision. So I don't know. Like, how does the Blizzard Activision word work? However they want to deal with that. I don't think as a viewer, as a fan, we really shouldn't be worried. Halo is still going to have a spot there. I don't see Blizzard Activision all of a sudden buying MLG and giving the middle finger to all the games that were hosting it, right? I don't think Halo is going to all of a sudden disappear because they see the market there. If anything, we might want to be excited maybe now that...
You know what? With EA doing it, Blizzard Activision doing it, and the fact that Activision has games that actively compete against Halo, wouldn't be surprised to see Microsoft be like, you know what? Let's start putting on some esports.
And that's who I think, if anything, needs to be more aware of what's going on. Not the fan. Halo will find a way.
Yeah.
Even if it's not with MLG anymore, Halo will find a way. And who isn't to say that Microsoft isn't going to work with Blizzard and Activision? They're completely separate types of companies when you look at it. Microsoft is a computer software company where Blizzard and Activision is a gaming company. People can be friends in this industry. You don't have to have your own league there. So Halo, I don't think is going anywhere, but I do think for the sake of a business standpoint, Microsoft and the companies are the ones who have to be more worried about it. For the fans' point of view, for us, the viewers, I mean, it makes no difference to me if there's a Halo tournament with MLG or ESL, right? There's a reason why majors for Counter-Strike can be with ESL or at a DreamHack, because I really don't care where it's at. What are the teams playing, right? That's what I want to know. I don't care who is the head sponsor. Yeah, I can be a production nerd and complain about that, but at the end of the day, if the games are being played, who cares? If anything, what this to me solidifies is Blizzard's games will never not have a competitive scene. Heroes of the Storm, which is not that popular of a MOBA when it comes to year-round viewership. Yeah, it was popular when BlizzCon was going on, but as far as consistent viewership, it's not the most popular of the games. But this solidifies. Blizzard has so much money and so much pride in what they build. I don't see them, now that they have their own foundation for a esports league, I don't see them allowing any of their games to be quote-unquote unsuccessful.
Well, we've talked about it before. If you can make a successful esport by just throwing money at it, and the only people that have successively been able to do that, you know, is Riot, and that's through complete control and marketing of their games. Like, they don't have to worry, they don't have to think about what anyone else is doing for their games. If they put the prize pool in there, you know, organize the tournaments, they're going to have people show up and play.
And complete control, that has such a negative connotation on it. I necessarily don't think that's a bad thing. Having complete control over your product and how that's portrayed necessarily is not a bad thing. You're constantly going to have, as a fan, as a viewer, you're constantly going to have that comfort knowing that maybe yeah, there might be a patch here or there that doesn't make a whole lot of sense or anything like that, but you're going to have that confidence knowing that the game has the support and the backing to stick around.
Well, you're getting into politics when you start talking about complete control and stuff. There could be situations where, like, there was a situation where the LCS, where a report came out that said Riot was going to require all the teams to wear their main sponsor logo as, like, the main crest on their jerseys.
Well, and again,
and then it came out, of course, that wasn't true.
Right.
But when you have complete control, you can say things like that.
Yes. Just like how you said, with politics, there is a fine line where everything's fine and dandy and then everything like that. But this is a new thing for this type of industry, is where you do have, you know, there is no mom and pop anymore. You do have the big names buying out the smaller ones. Believe it or not, MLG started out as a mom and pop, and now, you know, the corporate is moving in. Not a bad thing. I don't think MLG is going away. If anything, they might have bought it out to have that brand.
Yeah, MLG is, I believe, going to stay around.
It might be a thing where it's MLG brought to you by Blizzard Activision.
Ars Technica actually released a story saying that MLG was going to be dissolved completely. And then updated the story a couple hours later and was like, oh, sorry, Activision Blizzard said that's not the case. The quote directly was, our acquisition of Major League Gaming's business furthers our plans to create the ESPN of esports. MLG's ability to create premium content in its proven broadcast technology platform, questionable, including its live streaming capability, strengthens our strategic position in competitive gaming. That was from CEO Bobby Kotick. Kotick.
I think MLG will not completely go away for many reasons. One, which is a very basic and it might sound silly, but hear me out. The brand of MLG is so generic and so copyright heavy to be such a perfect general esports brand, they're going to want to keep that. They want Major League Gaming. The logo, everything about it screams mainstream.
I do hope they change that controller logo. I've always been so particular about the fact that it's a game console controller, but then all of these Blizzard games are not going to be played on a console.
I mean, I don't hate it. It's whatever, right? It's whatever. I understand your beef with that, but it's still such a generic. You can have that. It's a household name. Major League Gaming, Major League Baseball, National Hockey League. They're all very household.
Well, this is taken directly from all of those.
They're not some ridiculous extreme esports league, right? It's not something crazy stereotypical like that. It's very, very.
You mean you don't get that intense desire when you see the MLG logo to go have a Mountain Dew?
I you don't need the MLG logo to want me. The other day I found myself at lunch eating drinking Mountain Dew and eating Doritos, and I looked at and I was like, you know what? It works. There's a reason this is a stereotype, and that's because they're delicious. But I think they bought MLG to use it as their own division for that. I don't think they're gonna kick out games. I think they are going to pump more money into theirs. I think you're definitely going to see that. But about it now, where before you had BlizzCon was the big finals for all of their things, right? At BlizzCon, you had all the tournaments and finals. That's where Heroes of the Storm hosted their world tournament, was at BlizzCon. Well, now they'll be able to brand it more as come to MLG. Oh, and by the way, it's at BlizzCon.
Right.
I think it's going to be an easier way for them to separate their esports with Blizzard and Activision.
Well, even having all those other esports at a BlizzCon, you are exposing people that would normally only play Call of Duty or normally only play Halo. Maybe they'll go try Overwatch.
Or at least watch it, right? They don't even need people to be playing it. They want the viewership. I would feel.
Yeah,
that's where people are wanting esports to grow. We don't constantly need the most popular games to be the most popular esports.
I do worry about more exclusivity garbage with the streaming stuff, like with Call of Duty and MLG being, you know, exclusive streaming partners or whatever, if you could see more fracture in the streaming. I mean, we've already got, you know, Twitch, Azubu, YouTube Gaming, like,
and I understand.
There's a couple of Hitbox TV.
I understand competition is what makes the world turn, but my God.
Well, what's
Twitch,
bad is
Twitch has it right. Can we just go with Twitch? Well, everybody likes it.
There are websites out there that do nothing but allow you to search all the streaming sites, and then it links you to that particular streaming site once you find it.
Like, you know, when you're at home and you're like, man, I wish I could watch this Russian hockey game, but there's just nowhere to watch it at. So you just Google and you go to one of those free streaming websites. That's what half of these legitimate streaming websites look like. They look like borderline illegal Russian websites. And that's how I feel about like Azubu and everything like that. MLG's website, I've said it on the show before, is horrendous.
It's awful.
It used to be so pure and you had like the headline stories. Now you go there and you're like, where the hell do I even look to see? It's terrible the way they designed that website. That's just me on my soapbox.
Maybe
I don't think
Blizzard
that
will fix it.
Yeah, maybe. Activision, I don't know.
Blizzard
that's my soapbox. That's my rant on their website. My daily episode rant on their MLG's website. Now, one thing, though, to bring up with this, and I think we could have seen, it's all in retrospect, I think we could have seen this coming, right? You had, let's kind of put the pieces together. There were hints of StarCraft doing a major overhaul on their competitive scene. Like, Blizzard was really going to revamp the way competitive StarCraft is played.
Yep.
I haven't read much of that other than the one article, so don't kill me, StarCraft 2 fans. But that was rumor there. You have former co-CEO of MLG moved over to Blizzard Activision's, at the time, unnamed eSport division. So
with the ESPN, ex-ESPN CEO as well.
Yes. So you had a lot of pieces. Blizzard and Activision were paying a lot of money and doing a lot of behind the scenes to make it kind of work out for them. And now all of a sudden you had all these people that were with MLG, left MLG, and now they're back with MLG, but at a much higher role. Like, you almost had like a slingshot effect for these guys where they left the company to go join, you know, Big Brother, and now Big Brother bought out the small company, and now they're the bosses.
Well, it's like
it's genius, really.
It's a Palo Alto, San Francisco thing they call AccuHire, where they just hire away all of the people that made that company great, and then when that company starts falling or failing, they're like, we'll just go ahead and absorb the rest of you now.
So only time's really going to tell what happens with that. Again, as a viewer, as a fan, I've seen a lot of people freak out saying, like, this is the death of everything. This is going to become a monopoly. This is insane. How can we let this happen? Let's chill out on those.
If, like, we have four different companies that have a monopoly over their own game? Their own esports game. Like, I mean, it's not really monopoly,
it's just them branching off into their own thing.
Yeah, it's like, if I don't want to, like, support Blizzard's tournaments, I just won't play Heroes of the Storm. Or I won't play Overwatch. That's a silly argument. I don't know. That's my opinion.
Well, I agree with you, though. It's a very good point. And look at some of these games that do have that company support behind them. Wouldn't you rather have that than...
You know what I'm most excited about?
A bunch of leagues, like look at CSGO, where they have a bunch of leagues that all have their different outlets. But does anyone care? Like, when you see Fnatic and VP playing, are you like, man, I would watch this, but it's on Faceit, and I just refuse to watch Faceit? I'll tell you what, there's a lot of times where I'm watching matches, and it's not even till like midway through I even realize who the hell is putting it on, who's the main ones behind it. Because deep down inside, we don't care. I don't care if it's the Activision League hosting this Call of Duty
just
tournament.
Just want to watch esports.
Yeah, and, you know, again, if it was on Twitch, that'd be great. But at the end of the day, I just like Twitch. I just think it's my main streaming service, so please put it on there so I don't have to find your podunk website with your tournaments on it. But we really don't care where these are coming from. So it's a very not news story to think that Activision and Blizzard are just going to come and blow this thing up. They're not. Guess what? They want money too. So if they can work a deal out with Microsoft to have Halo, they're going to do it. They're not going to just be like, nah, we don't need Halo. How about you just take it? It's going to be silly. Now, with, you know, you might see exclusive rights where they might not have Counter-Strike, maybe, because Counter-Strike might be having exclusive, you know, that's Counter-Strike is kind of the last one, right? They are the last one where they haven't completely.
Yeah, and Valve has kind of controlled some of, or has introduced some stuff with Dota 2 to make it more diverse. They're much more hands-on with Dota 2 than they are with Counter-Strike. But also in Counter-Strike is the only place where you see teams demanding certain prize pools to participate. Because the teams hold a lot more power when there's not a developer behind the decisions that are going on in the game. So it's a catch 22. You either the developer has all the power and can say we're only going to have prize pools at X amount of dollars like Valve does for the majors, or you can have the teams that say, we're not going to come play at your tournaments unless, you know, the prize pool is this much and you pay for all of this stuff as well.
And one of those teams are going to have to quickly learn on how the Counter-Strike world works. There's a new Jenny from the block, and that is Optic Gaming. They have officially absorbed former team Conquest. Same guys, everything there. It's Conquest with Optic Gaming now, though. Optic Gaming, known for their top-of-the-line Call of Duty team. If you're looking at the best Call of Duty teams, it's Optic Gaming.
They also got Esports Team of the Year or something
like that. That is their fame. They won at the Video Game Awards. They won Esports, fan-voted, so take it with a grain of salt, but they definitely won Esports Team of the Year. And the CEO finally decided to take the plunge. He's been talking about it. He's been passing it around for a few months now.
Well, as I heard word on the street, is they were trying to get some teams, and the teams were like not having
well,
it.
Well, so here's the thing. Optic Gaming CEO, Mr. CEO, he was bouncing back and forth. Really, at the time, there was only European teams. He didn't want to go with European teams deep down inside because, you know,
it's a hassle. Yeah,
red, white, and blue, baby. NA coming back. This is where we start. This is where NA starts. And so it just never worked out for him. And then Conquest disbanded from the franchise, and he felt like this was an opportunity to pick him up. It's gonna be an interesting concept for him when you go from number one team. Let's pick up another one, and you have Conquest.
Well, they started at. Kind of at a, I've read they started at a mediocre team in Call of Duty. I don't follow Call of Duty esports. But I mean, coming from anytime you start an organization to become voted, you know, the number one, even if it is by Call of Duty Twitter followers, it's an accomplishment. And they managed to pick up a team that is inconsistently good. They have good tournaments.
I don't know if that a compliment.
I don't know.
Inconsistently good.
Like you have a moment every once in a while. But I could also see it very quick, like the team very quickly changing. Like I don't know how close they are as a unit, but like Shazam is like.
Well, so Hector Rodriguez, who is the CEO for Optic Gaming. He did say that he wants to stick them in a gaming house. I feel like when you stick a team in a gaming house, you have some commitment there just because it's like, how are you going to invite these kids over to live in the house and be like, yo, peace, you're not here. You had like a month really bad tournament here and I can't have you here anymore. And he wants them to mingle with Call of Duty. He wants them to become a gaming family, which I feel it's just a failed experiment over and over and over again. But hey, well, maybe he figured it out.
You know what's harder than getting five people to like each other? Getting like 10.
Who also are from completely opposite spectrums of, yeah, they're both FPSs, but...
Like, Call of Duty compared to Counter-Strike is a total bro game.
Right. You have Call of Duty crowd, and then you have Counter-Strike crowd, and they really don't mix.
Yeah.
In fact, I would say that's probably the constant debate is one says the other one is the worst gaming community ever. So, but you know what? Counter-Strike needed another... I felt like NA Counter-Strike needed a big franchise, whatever you want to call these guys, organization to step in. Optic Gaming, if anything, at least has the name behind it.
It has a name, but I mean, you can't put a name on... you can't, like, stick a name over Conquest and make them better.
No, I agree. It will change nothing as far as the results go. Now, maybe the gaming house and all that, maybe the attention to them will...
Okay, that I'll agree with. Like, the support structure, if they have a different kind of practice structure, if they can actually practice, you know, and because the Call of Duty team wins... You know, there's all that, what are they called in the sports world? Intangibles?
Yeah, you have the mental game. Maybe hanging out with the Call of Duty guys, seeing Call of Duty practice. Maybe that will, like, inspire them to be like, man, these guys are practicing all the time, and they're number one. We practice, like, once a week, and we're, like, tier 3 NA. So maybe we should be doing what they're doing. So I could see where, yes, not directly. You won't see. I think their first game is in January 7th. So just in a couple days here.
You know what it is?
I believe it's the Las Vegas final.
Yeah, it's the E-League finals. Yeah.
Yeah.
They won the NA qualifier.
So, yes. So there's that. We'll see here in a couple days on how they perform under Optic Gaming. Again, it's like you said. The name doesn't make a difference, right? They could all of a sudden become Fnatic. That's not going to all of a sudden make them a favorite in my book. They're still tier 2, tier 3 NA. I do think, though, in the long haul, I mean, how you can't tell me that the organization of Optic Gaming is not way beyond what Conquest could offer. No knock on Conquest, but you didn't respond to my email. So I'm going to put Optic Gaming ahead of you. That's what happens with my book. Don't answer my email. You get nicked out. Nicked a tier right there.
Does that make him tier... Is that what put him in tier 3?
Exactly. There wasn't even a tier 3 until they didn't respond to me. So I think that will be interesting to see, though, on just what happens there. I again, from a fan point of view, doesn't make a difference.
That's a good segue. Let's go ahead and talk about the E-League Road to Vegas finals.
AKA the warm-up for the Turner League.
Yeah. Turner is calling it E-League, which, going back to the MLG discussion...
You want to talk about something generic?
Yeah, that is awful.
There's a fine line of generic. One could say Major League Gaming is very generic. One could also say it's very household-friendly. E-League is not household-friendly. That is very generic.
So the finals are going to be played by X-Conquest Optic Gaming, who won the NA qualifier, the NA closed qualifier over Team Enemy, Team Splice, and Team Dogman. Liquid, Cloud9, CLG, where you at? Not playing in Vegas.
And you know, one thing that also stands out to me, just naming those teams, how so much can change from the start of that tournament to the end. Conquest is not even there anymore. They're now Optic Gaming. And Splice has disbanded and rebanded all within a tournament.
I just can't believe Team Liquid and Cloud9 lost the open qualifier winners.
I'm going to chalk that up to they just didn't care. And I'm going to tell myself that to make myself feel better.
So, Optic Gaming is going to meet Lounge Gaming, who was actually an open qualifier themselves, who went through and beat won out over Team Dignitas, G2, and Vexed Gaming. The brackets also included Mouse Sports and SK Gaming. So, once again,
You had more expected teams to go through. And I guess maybe that's the only thing, though, that's saving my interest with this. I'm not going to lie. The road to Vegas, the only reason I'm really interested is kind of like the prequel to E-League to see kind of what you can expect from it. But as far as like a team competition view, I would like to see Optic Gaming, but only because the name changed. But like I said, they're Conquest right now. There's not enough time between now and that match to make a difference for me as far as interest level goes.
None.
I'm watching because it's the first competitive Counter-Strike in like 2 months.
What's really interesting too is the broadcast talent they brought on. So like, just understand that this is going to be a single best of three game. But they paid for Anders, Simler, DDK, Richard Lewis, Thorne, James Bardolph, and then they're going to have YNK and Sapphire controlling the in-game cameras, which is pretty much DreamHack.
They got the crew back together.
Like, the only person they're missing is Sir Scoots to do his interviews, and that's because he would only be doing one interview.
Again, I think this is a prequel. This is a warm-up to E-League, though. That's what you're saying.
That will be, unless Anders and Simler, well, I guess DDK and James Bardolph, the same thing, unless their contracts with FaceIt and ESL prevent them from being at the E-League, you know, in Atlanta, where they're going to be filming the E-League stuff. This is going to be your broadcast team for it.
So despite not knowing the format of E-League, I agree with you.
Yeah.
I know there's rumors passing around that E-League might not even be live matches. It might be cut up of matches for the sake of time.
It's supposed to be live streamed and then like one cut up highlight sort of thing on a Friday night or something.
Makes sense if that's going to be the only way that they can fit these 6 hour matches in a 1 hour time block. Yeah. It's disappointing, but I guess from a television point of view, like, what else are they going to do? They're not going to give 6 hours, 5 hours.
And I don't know
to games.
I don't know if you've heard anything on this yet, but apparently there were rumblings that E-League was having issues getting teams to even commit to playing because E-League was not willing to put up or front money to these teams to get them to sign on.
Wait, so like they weren't signing on because they weren't paying, they weren't willing to give out the prize pool?
No. So E-League said, we will pay for flights. You know, you're here in Atlanta, hotels are pretty reasonable in Atlanta. We have, you know, the $1 million prize pool for each 10-week season, mm-hmm. whatever you want to call it. And the team still said, we want $10,000 up front to sign on to play in this tournament.
So this might be a good segue then into the next one that I kind of want to bring up. Something that came up 2 weeks ago, but it came up after in between shows, whatever. So the player salary going public. I know we want to get a little bit more in detail with this, but my point is going to be meshed with that one. I think that's really petty of the teams to do when you want money, when it's very questionable if the players will ever see that. It's very questionable if players will ever see this $10,000 that teams are demanding, if, you know, if that's the case. And at the same time, this is a tournament with prize pools and money that goes to first, second, third place. The teams need to win in order to get this money. You can't promise money to players and things like that for salary when, I mean, part of that salary stipulation should be on their placement. It's very hard for me, again, again, getting into the player salary public thing, and I feel like I've said this a lot this episode, from a fan point of view, it really doesn't matter to me if the player salary are ever public. I understand from a player's point of view, you want them to be public, because that's really more...
Well, it's a
If you are a suspected lower paid player, you want them to be public because it's going to help you make more. Yep,
that's exactly
if all of a sudden you realize, oh, Olaf is making a lot more money than you, you're probably, Olaf is probably like, oh no, I'm probably going to get bumped.
Yeah.
So,
but if you're a player that managed to negotiate a very good contract from yourself and your organization finds out that players that are much better than you are making much, much less than you, your value just went down.
I think, and from a talk show host perspective, that's what makes that interesting. It's going to add a lot more talking points if all of a sudden we can see salaries and compare players. That's, you're going to see players' worth all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Right now we're talking about, okay, well, look at Scream. Was he worth that buyout? Whatever it was. I forget the price off the top of my head. Was he worth that?
£130,000.
Okay. Was he worth that buyout? Well, now we're not just looking at the buyout. We're looking at the long-term thing of, are you worth your salary? Because we could get this guy here for a little cheaper, and then with the promise of, that's when you become bonus, right? Okay, we're going to pay you this much. If you place sixth or higher, though, in this tournament, we'll bonus you.
So for those that are unaware of what we're talking about, Team Ember, over the course of the holidays, released, first promised, and then eventually released their player salaries for their LCS Challenger team. So this is a team that's not even playing in the big LCS splits and big LCS tournaments. This is a team that's trying to vie for an LCS spot by winning it. Let's just say they pay these players a lot of money.
And this is salary, right? This has nothing to do with prize pool.
This is salary with bonuses. Some of this is, so the salaries, the average salary looks to be about $63,000 a year.
Not bad.
Not bad. You throw in bonuses, the average salary jumps up to about $78,000 a year. With their top player making $65,000 base, he made $27,000 in bonuses. For his salary that year, he made $92,000 to play on a challenger team. And talking about talking points, or going back to talking points, Twitter blew up. Not because, like, not debating the, you know, the merit behind releasing salaries, but saying, I cannot believe you're paying a challenger team this much money.
So, again, is that, your tone of voice there made it seem like they're getting paid too much.
Well,
are they getting paid too much, or are the top teams getting paid too little? That's what we're going to base this off of.
Right.
70,000, that's enough to live off of. Plenty enough to live off of as a professional gamer where you probably don't go out much, right?
Just right.
Invest in a computer, some comfortable chairs, maybe some energy drinks, and you're good. So 70,000 is plenty to live off of. And as a challenger team, you're probably expected to, I mean, you're there. You're a challenger. You're there to move up. So are they getting paid okay? And top teams are getting paid way too little? We don't know that.
So
it's all relative, right?
It's all relative to revenue and of the teams, basically. So like it depends on the percentage of revenue. If a team is making, you know, if this team in particular is only making $150,000 a year, you know, they're paying more in salary than they're making in, you know, as a return on investment of that salary. But if this team is making $1 million a year, it's not so bad. Word on the street is Team Ember is paying these salaries through investor money. So it's actually money that they're supposed to spend and burn through. And they said the reasons why they're doing it is they want to, first they said they believe in fostering regional talent. So they're trying to build up the...
Now, where are they from? Does it say that in the article? Okay, so they are in A.
Yep.
Okay, so that's definitely not bad then.
Yeah.
60,000, 70,000, that is definitely not bad.
Oh, you can survive on half of that easily.
Yeah, you could survive on that.
they think that by providing that, they will foster better regional talent by encouraging people or encouraging kids and players to do this as a living. Like, if you tell somebody you can make $92,000 a year playing games versus you can make $10,000 a year playing games and you have to go get a part-time job.
And that makes a lot of sense, because you do hear these players saying, okay, I'm quitting this job so I can focus on this full-time, or I'm quitting school for now to focus on this on full-time. And we never really understood, well, what does that mean? What if you're making enough to live off of it? That changes everybody's perspective of, okay, you're being silly and this is dumb that you're quitting school to go play video games, to where, no, you're quitting school to focus on a career.
Right.
$60,000, again, you won't be driving a Mercedes
rolling around or anything like that.
Won't be rolling up in your caddy, but you're gonna have a nice form of living if you're responsible with your money.
Right.
So I think, again, that's some talking points. As a viewer, I don't give a rip if a team discloses his winnings or not. I guess, yeah, if you want to be part of the Kumbaya fest of, hey, we need to treat these players fairly, there needs to be a player union that regulates that players are getting paid fairly, this is what it's about, this is the starting blocks to making esports a professional manner, then yeah, okay. That's a fine point of view, and I can't really argue with you. But at the end of the day, do I care if Fnatic's like, no, we're going to keep that in-house. Look, the players are happy with what they make, and that's all that matters. That's fine, but again...
Does that opinion flow over to traditional sports? Because they cite the number three reason why they said is they believe in transparency, and their first paragraph is talking about how we know how much Stephen Curry makes or Tom Brady...
Maybe Stephen Curry, but we'll let it slide since we're on an esports show.
It's not pronounced Steven?
No, it's not. But we'll just move on. You're just embarrassing yourself.
It's basketball.
So, and that's one thing. In North America sports, it's very clear. In a lot of soccer leagues, you have ideas. In like EPL, you have ideas on how much people make, but you don't necessarily know their books. For North American sports, basically be a team's accountant because
the NHL doesn't. The NHL salaries get leaked by reporters, and the reason why they get leaked by reporters is because the players' agents know that there's better negotiating rights if you know what everybody else in the league is making.
And that's why I think it would be hard if it takes one team to hit the dominoes to make this effect go, and Team Ember did it. It takes one team to show like, hey, we're paying our guys $60,000 and they're challengers. They're not even they're semi-pro.
Right.
And then these pro teams are like, yo, you're not paying me any salary. I'm just making what I win. That doesn't seem fair. And I feel like that's I guess where bonuses come in and contract details, and every team's going to be different on how they handle winnings.
Yeah. I'm sure there's already language in there about leaking what salary you make. Like, you're not allowed to disclose it to anybody else or whatever. But I'm sure if there's not, you're going to start seeing it, because teams aren't going to want people to know what their teams are making.
And is that because they want it to be confidential, or they're worried that if all of a sudden you realize that you're like a top five team and you're paying your team trash, it's going to look really bad for the organization?
It's going to be power creep. So like power creep in card games, like Hearthstone, when you make a card that's really powerful, or you pay a guy that's not very, you know, pay a guy a lot of money, you either have to eventually pay him less, put him back in line with the rest of them, or you have to start paying everybody below him more, and then everybody above him more, to make him compete.
Right, and this is one thing in any sport, right? There's a reason why every time a quarterback signs a contract, he breaks the record for being the highest paid quarterback.
Right.
Because every time someone signs a new contract, it's going to set the bar. Now, one thing that I would love to see, I don't want it to come across like a salary cap. I think esports is too small of a field to have salary caps, because you're going to force people not to play on a team or unable to play on a team because someone's getting too much money or whatever. I don't like the idea of a salary cap for a 5-man team, whether that be on Counter-Strike or Dota or anything. It seems silly. But you might see teams not being able to afford a player. Like, yeah. Could you imagine Fnatic's salary for CSGO? Literally winning every major, everything there. Now, maybe they can afford to pay them more because they're getting all these winnings, so their bonuses are going through the roof, or maybe they're like, hey, you know, we're pocketing more of your winnings, but we're spreading it out evenly through all of you through guaranteed salaries. Or maybe they're like, hey, we can afford to pay Olaf and JW, but, you know, these other guys, we might not be able to match your salaries.
Oh, I'm sure they're not all making the same amount of money, but I mean, it's
a performance based salaries.
I also know Fnatic's not hurting at all because, I mean, they just bought a computer peripheral manufacturer to make Fnatic gear. Anyway, the whole player salary thing. Also crowdfunding.
They started a Kickstarter on it.
They did, didn't they? So, yeah, I do remember that.
So hey, we're gonna buy out a company. We're gonna brag about how much money we have. Oh, by the way,
that's the same stupid stuff as crowdfunded prize pools.
It's like when Jerry Jones made a stadium in Arlington and somehow got the citizens of the city to pay for the stadium through taxes. It's what it is.
Yeah,
they duped you. They played you, son. You got played, and that's what Kickstarter is. Again, that's our episode rant on crowdfundness, because we're just terrible people and
we're
feel
salty.
Like, we're just so we're so salty. We're so corporate that we just feel like crowdfunding is not the way to go. But getting back in, as we digress. Final thoughts on player salaries going public. As a viewer, as a fan, don't really care. As a player, I think that's what you want. I think that's how you help teams grow. You want to talk about shakeups? If teams can't afford to pay players, they're going to go to a team that can afford to play them.
Well,
so I think
that's the way
to go.
I would like them if we had more teams with more money. I don't like them because of that reason. It already happens in Counter-Strike where teams are used as stepping stones to the big teams.
You would definitely have dynasties in that sense. I mean, yeah. look at baseball, where baseball doesn't have a salary cap in the MLB. You can honestly pay players. Now, it has the same thing, though, where one pitcher signs a contract this year and he's the highest paid. Wait 6 months and he's not going to be the highest paid pitcher anymore, because that's how salary caps, or excuse me, that's how salaries work. Again, though, as someone who has a talk show about it, I would love for salaries to be announced, because then we can directly compare players
to one another.
You can immediately know a player's worth and if they're worth it. Because I can promise you, you'd be shocked probably on how some players get paid, whether that be because they get paid too much or too little. You know, that's how you have overrated players. You might honestly also see less trigger happy teams signing or kicking off players.
That I would like to see a little more stability on the rosters.
And if you have salaries that you're actually signing contracts with, you might see a little bit more stability in saying, okay, or you might go the exact opposite also. You might also see where it's like, bro, I just paid you like $60,000 and you're this guy who's getting paid $30,000 is doing better than you.
Yep.
So again, it all goes back to contracts and esports and how they want to figure that out. And it's going to take a long time before you work it, because again, you're going to have to treat, in my eyes, each organization is going to have to keep each game division separate. Cloud9 cannot look at an organization as a whole. They're going to have to look, okay, how much money is Counter-Strike bringing in? How much is the CSGO team bringing in? How much is Dota bringing in? And then, you know, however they want to factor it in there. But obviously, like for Fnatic, their CSGO team is bringing in way more money than their Dota 2 team.
Oh, I hope they don't compare salaries across games.
You cannot look at that and be like, well, that's not fair. These guys are getting paid way more than us. Well, okay, go perform as well as them, and then you can have that argument. But again, that will be drama saved for another day. The other one thing that I wanted to throw out here, do you have anything else that you wanted to say on that before we move on?
No, let's go.
Okay, because we're going to wrap this show up here. Right. Real quick, biggest news story that I've seen all week was DreamHack announcing that CSGO will have a $1 million collective prize pool for 2016. That's the biggest non-news story ever.
Collective, does that mean over the course of their tournaments?
Yes, over all the tournaments, they will give out $1 million.
So they're
going to
have four $250,000 tournaments.
Well, and then they've already, like, you can go on Reddit. People have tried figuring out the math on how they've done it because they've already announced like seven tournaments. So they're like, okay, so if you have two, maybe three big tournaments and then little tournaments, they're thinking the little tournaments will have more money. As I said,
but if the team union's demands for those top CSGO teams to show up was a minimum of $250,000 prize pool.
Like I said, it's the biggest news story that people made a big. It's because it could have been the CEO of DreamHack. I have no idea. He tweeted out that. He tweeted out saying DreamHack will give out $1 million for CSGO. Everyone jumped on it thinking, oh my god, they're having $1 million tournament. That's amazing.
That's like when stores put up like up to 70% off.
And like, it's like
you have one thing.
One item in the entire store is 70% off,
that's
and the rest
the
is
same
10.
BS marketing.
Yeah, no, he
And you know why he did that? That's because Turner said, we're giving away $1 million.
And what's theirs? Two tournaments for 500 apiece, right?
No, theirs is $1 million for each 10-week season.
Okay. So that's not... Okay. So there you go. They're doing it right. But from what everyone is...
But that's DreamHack trying to keep up.
Everyone is breaking down that tweet, and I think everyone's realizing like, oh, okay, wait, you really meant overall for the year. So again...
That's nonsense.
Call me when I see a bigger prize pool, because I think he oversold it and made it a big deal. But hey, $1 million is still a lot, right? Let's not completely dismiss that idea. But what we will have to dismiss is this episode of The Center Ring, because it's time to go home, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much for listening to episode 14 of The Center Ring TCR. I hope you enjoyed it as much as we have. We're glad to be back. We'll be back to our weekly selves, this time in podcast and YouTube fashion. Be sure to check out the website, tcr.gg. You can check out all the latest show notes. You can check out the YouTube link, which will have this episode up there here on Wednesday in 2 days from this, which is probably completely irrelevant from when you're listening. So it will be on YouTube. You can always check us out on Twitter at The Center Ring. Let us know what you think of the show. Give us a follow. It's really the easiest way for us to communicate with you. You can find me on Twitter at Pirate Mushroom. Let me know. You can find Brandon at...
I changed it again.
Oh my God.
No, I'm kidding. It's at Brand Any New.
Brand Any New. So we're all over the internet now. We're taking over. We're on YouTube. We're on Twitter. We have our own website.
Is that all over the internet?
That's it.
That's close enough.
That's every corner. We're on Twitch. We have an account. We don't do anything with it. That's going to happen then. So again, we are TCR, The Center Ring, tcr.gg. Check it out. You can see all the latest shows. Check us out on YouTube now. Subscribe to that channel. That's really probably the easiest, most convenient way for anyone to listen. And again, that is episode 14 in the books. So again, thank you so much for listening, and we will be back next week.